Welcome to the Vegocity Podcast for the 26th of May, 2014, the podcast that spies on the spies. This is your host, Shane Killian. Let's eavesdrop on the news of the bogus. So in the past, we've said good things about WikiLeaks, and we've said good things about Glenn Greenwald and his new venture, The Intercept. Now it seems there's an issue where the two are at odds. So what's happened is, there's an NSA program called Mystic, where the NSA spies on five different countries. The Washington Post reported on this, but refused to name the countries. So Greenwald reported that three of the countries were Mexico, Kenya, and the Philippines, where they were collecting metadata. They were also collecting full take audio on the other two countries. Now, this is where they not only listen in basically on every cell phone conversation, but also archive the audio for future use, a system codenamed Somalget. Greenwald revealed the name of one of these two countries, the Bahamas. The other he redacted. So The Intercept wrote, quote, "By targeting the Bahamas' entire mobile network, the NSA is intentionally collecting and retaining intelligence on millions of people who have not been accused of any crime or terrorist activity. Nearly 5 million Americans visit the country each year, and many prominent U.S. citizens keep homes there, including Senator Tom Harkin, Bill Gates, and Oprah Winfrey." He also wrote, quote, "In addition, the program is a serious and perhaps illegal abuse of the access to international phone networks that other countries willingly grant the United States for legitimate law enforcement surveillance. If the NSA is using the Drug Enforcement Administration's relationship to the Bahamas as a cover for secretly recording the entire country's mobile phone calls, it could imperil the long-standing tradition of international law enforcement cooperation that the United States enjoys with its allies." But Greenwald didn't want to release the name of the fifth country, even though exactly the same thing is going on over there. The Intercept referred to it simply as Country X. The reason the Intercept article gives is, quote, "In response to specific, credible concerns that doing so could lead to increased violence." Greenwald also specified in a tweet that it was a small company that was involved, which he was worried would be at physical risk. So WikiLeaks, and presumably Julian Assange himself, shot back. Apparently they'd gotten the same information, but had been content to let Greenwald reveal it up to that point. But then, on the 19th, they tweeted, quote, "We will reveal the name of the censored country, whose population is being mass recorded, in 72 hours. Now, we don't know how they got that information. The whole point of WikiLeaks is to protect the source, after all. We don't know if they got a whole cache of Snowden documents, or if someone leaked them this specific information because Greenwald wouldn't publish it, or whatever. They also tweeted, quote, "An entire people are being victimized. Small, abusive company does not eclipse a nation. At most, can be warned pre-pub." They also pointed out that withholding the name of the country, quote, "normalizes redactions that deprive an entire citizenry of their rights and pushes information harms nonsense." Greenwald made some good points in response, such as how redacted information can be unredacted but not the other way around. He also said, quote, "I found it a very close call, but the rationale you, WikiLeaks, just cited played a big role in my agreement." The whole back and forth is interesting reading, but long story short, true to their word, 3 days later, WikiLeaks published the identity of the fourth country whose calls were having their audio recorded and archived by the NSA. Quote, "WikiLeaks cannot be complicit in the censorship of victim state X. The country in question is Afghanistan." So, of course, the fear is now that there will be all this violence in Afghanistan, not that there isn't enough already. But aside from the normal Taliban attacks that have been going on over there, the only big attack that's happened since then, it seems, was on the Indian consulate, and it's unclear how that could possibly be related to this. And of course, people have been predicting escalating violence anyway due to the upcoming June elections. So lots of people are saying that Greenwald has been too cautious, and he needs to do better about releasing the information that he has. But you know, this might not be a bad setup. One of the reasons Martin Luther King got taken seriously is that he wasn't Malcolm X. So King was always like, "Come on, you can deal with me. You don't have to deal with that guy." If Greenwald plays his cards right, he could be the Martin Luther King to Assange's Malcolm X. And WikiLeaks would still be there when more extreme action is necessary. Hackers, terrorists, the NSA. But I repeat myself. Your online security is under attack, and the weakest point is your password. That's why you need LastPass. LastPass plugs into your browser and allows you to randomly generate strong, unique passwords anywhere on the web, all protected by one master password. LastPass sets up in minutes and gives you secure automatic logins throughout the web, synchronizing across all your browsers and all your computers, at home, at work, or on the road. It even securely stores sensitive form data, including credit card numbers. Back up sensitive documents, membership info, Wi-Fi logins, and more. And with LastPass Premium, you can get these benefits on other applications and even mobile devices, and also get priority customer support. Sign up at password.pagosity.tv for a free month of LastPass Premium. Log in securely everywhere using the last password you'll ever have to remember. Go to password.pagosity.tv and get LastPass now. You say you don't like Bitcoin? Why not? Oh, because it's not gold. No problem. Just go to coins.pagosity.tv and you'll be taken to Coinable, where you can buy gold or silver coins or bars with your bitcoins, with literally up-to-the-minute spot pricing. Now there's no reason not to jump on the Bitcoin bandwagon. Whether you're a Bitcoin miner, service operator, Bitcoin business owner, or market speculator, you can get gold and silver from reputable dealers, and Coinable has Bitcoin liquidity for fast processing of your order. Coinable even utilizes a special shipping infrastructure to ensure that your investment arrives safely at your door. And you know what? By going to coins.pagosity.tv, you won't pay a penny more, excuse me, a Satoshi more for your purchase. But you'll help this podcast. You can even sell your gold and silver for Bitcoin as well. Coinable is your Bitcoin to gold marketplace. So go to coins.pagosity.tv and start turning your Bitcoins into gold now. So we've talked about Ladar Levinson's venture LavaBit, a way of delivering secure encrypted email. We've covered the comments Levinson has made since then, but now, for the first time, he goes into detail, giving us the whole story of what happened. So just getting everyone back up to speed, Levinson had been complying with federal warrants against individuals, but when came the order to turn over all of the encryption keys, well, that was just a road too far. So if you remember, he printed them out in four-point type and said, "Lots of luck." And then the court turned around and made him turn them all over electronically, at which point he shut down the service because it was no longer secure. According to Levinson, quote, "What ensued was a flurry of legal proceedings that would last 38 days, ending not only my startup, but also destroying bit by bit the very principle on which I founded it, that we all have a right to personal privacy. I was served legal papers a total of 7 times and was in contact with the FBI every other day. This was the period a prosecutor would later characterize as my period of silence. It took a week for me to identify an attorney who could adequately represent me, given the complex technological and legal issues involved, and we were in contact for less than a day when agents served me with a summons ordering me to appear in a Virginia courtroom over 1,000 miles away from my home. 2 days later, I was served the first subpoena for the encryption keys. With such short notice, my first attorney was unable to appear alongside me in court. Because the whole case was under seal, I couldn't even admit to anyone who wasn't an attorney that I needed a lawyer, let alone why. In the days before my appearance, I would spend hours repeating the facts of the case to 12 attorneys as I sought someone else that was qualified to represent me. I also discovered, now listen to this part, this is important, I also discovered that as a third party in a federal criminal indictment, I had no right to counsel. After all, only my property was in jeopardy, not my liberty. Finally, I was forced to choose between appearing alone or facing a bench warrant for my arrest. Now, I'm sorry, but anyone subpoenaed to a court at any time should be able to have an attorney present. Quote, "In Virginia, the government replaced its encryption key subpoena with a search warrant and a new court date. I retained a small local law firm before I went back to my home state, which was then forced to assemble a legal strategy and file briefs in just a few short days. The court barred them from consulting outside experts about either the statuses or the technology involved in the case. The court didn't even deliver transcripts of my first appearance to my own lawyers for 2 months and forced them to proceed without access to the information they needed. Then a federal judge entered an order of contempt against me without even so much as a hearing. So yeah, lots of stuff to object to here. No court should be allowed to rule against someone in absentia, even if it's just a contempt ruling. But the appellate court upheld a contempt charge because Levinson hadn't disputed it in court, which he couldn't do because he wasn't there to begin with. Quote, since the U.S. Supreme Court traditionally declines to review based on wholly procedural grounds, I will be permanently denied justice. The courts also refuse to consider the question of whether law enforcement can demand all of the encryption keys a business has and use them to decrypt and observe all private communications, even when they only have a warrant for specific persons or other targets. Quote, the problem here is technological. Until any communication has been decrypted and the contents parsed, it is currently impossible for a surveillance device to determine which network connections belong to any given suspect. The government argued that, since the inspection of the data was to be carried out by a machine, they were exempt from the normal search and seizure protections of the Fourth Amendment. So I guess as long as it's a machine, the Fourth Amendment doesn't apply. No! The Constitution doesn't say that! And just because the founders didn't have computers doesn't mean it doesn't apply. That's like saying freedom of speech doesn't apply on the internet. Oh, wait, I probably shouldn't give them ideas. And get this, quote, more importantly for my case, the prosecution also argued that my users had no expectation of privacy, even though the service I provided, encryption, is designed for users' privacy. Wow. Just wow. Levinson wraps it up quite nicely. Quote, if my experience serves any purpose, it is to illustrate what most already know. Courts must not be allowed to consider matters of great importance under the shroud of secrecy, lest we find ourselves summarily deprived of meaningful due process. If we allow our government to continue operating in secret, it is only a matter of time before you or a loved one find yourself in a position like I did, standing in a secret courtroom, alone, and without any of the meaningful protections that were always supposed to be the people's defense against an abuse of the state's power. So we also covered where the Obama administration ran a fake vaccine program in Pakistan in order to collect DNA in their search for bin Laden, a program which ended up playing no role whatsoever in finding him, but which did result in Pakistan banning the polio vaccine. And guess what? At a time when India, generally considered to be the worst place in the world for polio, is now down to 0 cases a year thanks to vaccines, neighboring Pakistan is experiencing a resurgence of polio. Gee, thanks, Barry. Well, now, the Obama administration, on May 16, promised that they would no longer use the tactic. Really? They promise. Just like they promised to close Gitmo, promised to stop raiding medical marijuana clinics, promised they wouldn't spy on us, promised to be the most transparent administration in history. And why did it take them so long to do this? Why didn't they make this pledge the day it became public knowledge? This goes way beyond too little too late. Pakistan is one of 3 countries where polio is endemic. Mandatory immunization points have been set up at Pakistani airports to try and stop polio from spreading to other countries. Really, we need a lot more from this administration. This wasn't even a mea culpa. And this irresponsible administration, who is directly responsible for many, many deaths due to polio in Pakistan, people who would have been saved if they'd been allowed to get the vaccine, the individuals who are directly responsible for ordering, planning, and carrying out this program must pay restitution for them, must pay restitution to the victims, and should even be tried under a criminal court of law. Anything less just isn't justice. Bogosity.tv is a participant in the Amazon Services LLC Associates Program, an affiliate advertising program designed to provide a means for sites to earn advertising fees by advertising and linking to Amazon.com. Just clear your cookies and go to Amazon.bogosity.tv, or check the right-hand side of the podcast page for Amazon's best deals, including the deal of the day and limited-time lightning deals on all sorts of great products. So next time you buy online, go to Amazon.bogosity.tv. And now it's time to scientifically notate this week's biggest bogon emitter. And from Kevin Underhill's excellent legal blog, Lowering the Bar, comes the story of Anton Purisima, who is suing the Albon Paint Store and others for, are you ready for this? $2 undecillion. That's right, $2 undecillion. That's 2,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000, billion billion. In scientific notation, it's 2 times 10 to the 36th power, or a 2 followed by 36 zeros. Underhill calls it 2 octillion gigadollars. And why? It's not clear, but the complaint mentions him being bit on the finger by a dog, being overcharged for coffee at LaGuardia Airport, and Chinese people taking his picture without permission. Needless to say, this is a lot more money than exists, but as Underhill points out, it's not the first time. We've laughed before the entertainment industry for claiming in court that online piracy has cost them more money than exists in the world, but that's hardly the worst of it. A Katrina victim sued for $3 quadrillion, another man sued for breach of contract for $38 quadrillion, and get this, a man sued Bank of America for $1.784 septillion. But this one leaves them all behind. As Randall Monroe of XKCD pointed out on his blog, What If, this is 20 sextillion times, a sextillion is 10 to the 22, by the way, this is 20 sextillion times the estimated value of all goods and services produced by humanity ever. It's also 2 trillion times the current market value of all the minerals in the Earth's crust. Monroe also calculated that Alban Payne could hire Ted Olson, the world's most highly paid lawyer, at $1,800 an hour, and at that rate, they could hire 300 quintillion Ted Olsons to defend them in the case, have them all work 80-hour weeks, 52 weeks a year for 1,000 generations, and it would still cost 25 one-millionths of what they would have to pay him if he won and got the full amount. It's so mind-boggling that only Anton Purisima could possibly be this week's biggest bogon emitter. And now we have the second Silver Kluon winner for 2014. It goes to Tyler Vegan, who made the website Spurious Correlations. So we've mentioned, till we're blue in the face, that correlation isn't causation. If you're wondering if there's a relationship between two things, and you check it out and you find a correlation, it might mean there's something to it, but you still have to go find a mechanism. It's valid if you have a theory to begin with, and then you find a correlation, but the problem is that people can go data mining, and if they have a big enough data set, they can find all sorts of crazy correlations that don't mean anything. For example, Vegan found a very tight correlation between U.S. spending on space and the number of suicides. If that sounds kind of random, well, that's because it is. He went through a lot of data and found out that these two metrics, just by chance, happen to match each other. We also have a correlation between the number of drownings in swimming pools and Nicolas Cage movies. And my personal favorite, a correlation between the number of people who died by becoming tangled in their own bed sheets and the per capita consumption of cheese. There's an even tighter correlation between tangled bedsheet deaths and revenue generated by skiing facilities. So I guess the moral is, don't ski in bed. There are also inverse correlations, like honeybee colonies and juvenile marijuana arrests. And if you think about it, including inverse correlations doubles your chance of finding a match. Some of them you can sort of see a common cause, like arcade revenues and computer science doctorates. It makes sense that both would go up as computers become more ubiquitous in society. Then there's the divorce rate in Mississippi correlating with murders by bodily force. You can make up your own joke to go with that one. But then there are others that are just crazy unrelated, like crude oil imports from Norway and drivers killed in a train collision. Damn it, Norway, stop that! The cool thing about this site is you can use it to find weird correlations of your own. For example, the precipitation in my home state of North Carolina correlates quite well to the points scored by the losing team in the Super Bowl. And the number of lawyers in North Carolina correlates with the number of people who die falling out of a wheelchair. So thanks, Tyler Vegan, for this beautiful demonstration of the correlation-causation fallacy. Enjoy your shiny new silver kluon, and if this happens to correlate with an increase in your wealth and happiness, we're all too happy to take the credit. History is written by the winners, and so apparently is economics. That's why there's Liberty Classroom. Probably the best single learning resource for history and economics on the web, Liberty Classroom teaches U.S. history, Western Civ, and economics from actual university professors. There's lots of free material to get you started, including introductory lectures on all these subjects. And when you sign up, you'll get the full site's content for just $99 a year, less than the price of 2 cups of coffee a month. And if you type in the promo code BOGOSITY in all caps, you'll get your first year for just $88. Lectures are available in both video and audio format, so you can watch or listen to them on your computer, your phone or tablet, or in your car. Learn at your own pace about the subjects you're interested in and become a more effective debater. You'll also get access to lots of supplemental materials and even the professors themselves via the discussion forum and even live video chats. Inform yourself against the myths and propaganda of our society. Visit LibertyClassroom.com. And now it's time to draw and quarter this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire!
The Facebook page Being Liberal could really get this award on any given week, starting with the fact that their avatar is a picture of a man who herded people into concentration camps simply because they had slanted eyes, up to the number of graphic memes they generated, which we ended up refuting in the bogus photo album of our Facebook page. Then there's the fact that any time someone posts a refutation of their idiocy on their page, or even simply quotes Ayn Rand, the admins instantly block them. For example, the skeptical libertarian was banned for bringing up the whole FDR interning Japanese Americans thing. Nice echo chamber there. Yes, they really are some of the biggest woos on the internet, up there with creationists and moon hoaxers. But this time, they've reached a level of fail they've only aspired to before. On May 13, they posted a graphic to their page with the following quote. Individual rights are not subject to a public vote. A majority has no right to vote away the rights of a minority. The political function of rights is precisely to protect minorities from oppression by majorities. And the smallest minority on earth is the individual. Sounds good, right? What's fail about this? Only one thing. Although they gave no attribution to the graphic, this is a quote from The True Virtue of Selfishness by Ayn Rand. Of course, several people pointed that out and got promptly banned for it. Mark Haru got banned because he posted a Velociraptor meme that read, "If being liberal figures out they quoted Ayn Rand, will they ban themselves?" But here's the thing, they had to have known it was Ayn Rand. Evan Graysell found the original on DailyMayo.com and posted it, and Being Liberal had cropped the name Ayn Rand from the bottom, so they deliberately cropped off the name Ayn Rand when they posted it. If they hadn't done that, I would have no problem. In fact, I would have congratulated them on realizing that you can agree with people you're otherwise politically at odds with. But they just couldn't bring themselves to do that. Just like they couldn't handle the fact that St. Roosevelt herded Japanese Americans into concentration camps, they couldn't handle Ayn Rand saying something they agreed with. To them, everyone on their side is good, and everyone else is bad. The we and the not we again. It's not just the fact that they quoted it, but the fact that they tried to hide who it was from that makes Being Liberal this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire!
Well, that wraps up this Blessed Are the Cheesemakers edition of the Bogosity Podcast. Please visit the forums of Bogosity.tv, where you can read the show notes and join the discussion on these and other subjects. This podcast is free but not free to produce, so please donate via PayPal or Bitcoin at the top of the Bogosity.tv website or down the right-hand side of the podcast page and give generously to keep this podcast going. And if you'd like to contribute to the podcast, just send a question, statement, news article, or rant to podcast@bogosity.tv. Put it in an audio file, and if it's good enough, it'll get played right in the podcast. Thank you for listening. Until next time, here's a quote from Carl Sagan. The suppression of uncomfortable ideas may be common in religion and politics, but it is not the path to knowledge. Kinder Totenlieder was composed by Gustav Mahler and performed by Marian Anderson, accompanied by the San Francisco Symphony Orchestra. The Bogosity Podcast is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution on Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Imported License. Bogosity. Do you want answers to creationist claims against evolution? Would you like to know more about evolution yourself, or even engage creationists more directly, with actual peer-reviewed sources to back you up? My book, How Evolution is Scientific, is designed to show the basics of evolutionary theory and how it is so well supported using the scientific method. It's impeccably sourced, with references to the actual scientific material, and is arranged using the creationists' own criteria of what is scientific. Using their own arguments against them, see how evolution is scientific, but creationism is not, based on observations, accurate predictions, logic, and evidence. Get answers to common creationist claims, and even a primer on abiogenesis, the start of all life. It's all in my book, How Evolution is Scientific, available at Amazon and on Kindle, EPUB, and PDF as well. Get How Evolution is Scientific and never be taken in by creationists again.